in the National Council of Provinces. The select committee. I know most of the members are used to the portfolio committee. And even when they come to the select committee, you find our presentations are written, presentation to the portfolio committee, and then we get very angry because our hearts are next to the NCOP, and we want the NCOP to be known everywhere. The upper house. We are from the upper house. So I represent Mpumalanga in the National Council of Provinces. Can the Deputy Minister introduce herself? Our members of the Select Committee don't know you. They know you as from Mpumalanga, but that we've got a Deputy Minister from Mpumalanga, I'm proud where I'm sitting.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Dina Bule, and I'm the Deputy Minister of Communications.
Okay, we are going to... I want other members to introduce themselves. I've got apologies from other members. They're still in other meetings. As you know, that we are few in the NCOP, and we are really trying to, you know, run around to fulfill the mandate. So, Runabad, Honorable, can you introduce yourself and tell us from which province are you?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm Herman Groenewald. I'm a representative of the Northwest Province, and I'm a member of the NCOP.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Robert Alfred Lees, otherwise known as Mazamban from KZN. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I'm Zwalam Lenzana, representing Eastern Cape.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Mabija Libohane from the province Limpopo, representing the African National Congress.
Loli? Good afternoon. I am Pumelele Loli Sibisi. I am the committee secretary.
I'm Songsene Ngobo, the researcher for the select committee.
Gigi, welcome. Can you introduce your team?
Thank you, Jefferson. Can I just, before I introduce the team, just formally, we did speak about the fact that Minister couldn't be here, but just also formally say that, you know, due to the changes, Minister couldn't be here. And also we have three Deputy Directors General who had serious clashes and commitments that they couldn't change. So I apologize for Dr. Keith Chongwe, who is responsible for international, Mr. Norman Mungilele, ICT policy development, but we have somebody here, as well as Ms. Rose Zucchese from ICT infrastructure development. So if I can start with the introductions, I will introduce myself and then I'll ask my colleagues to introduce them. I think it's always good to hear the voices of those whose names appear. So my name is Khada Grabe. I'm the Acting Director General of the Department.
Good afternoon, Chair. My name is Harry Matabate. I'm DDG for Finance and ICT Enterprise Development.
Good afternoon. My name is Mukwining Tapu. I'm the DDG responsible for Presidential National Commission on Information Society and Development.
Good afternoon. My name is Basani Baloyi. I'm the Acting COO and Deputy Director General for Governance and Administration.
My name is Harold Wessel. I'm the Acting CEO of Moroccan Skills Institute.
Good afternoon. Anneke Groen, Chief Director for ICT Infrastructure and Applications.
Good afternoon. Reneva Fourie, Chief Director, Policy Implementation, Tracking and Assessment.
Good afternoon. My name is Manazim Pashela. I'm the Chief Director in the Office of the DG.
Good afternoon. I'm Farhad Osman, the Chief Director responsible for strategic planning and monitoring.
Good afternoon. I'm Fiona Mbewe, the Chief Director, Intergovernmental Relations.
The team that will present, the others, is also staff members that are just sitting in. Do you want them to introduce themselves as well? Okay.
Honorable members, as you remember, we were supposed to have had this meeting yesterday, but because of the joint sitting, we couldn't because we had to get the bus back. And I really do apologize, but this today is also a working day. I know you are on your way home, but the week is to finish the week for this quarter. So the minister was supposed to be with us yesterday, and when we postponed the meeting to today, he couldn't because of prior commitment. So we really, we do accept his apology, and we appreciate the Deputy Minister to be with us, though he'll also leave us because he's got a meeting in Pretoria at 6 o'clock. So he's got a flight to catch. So you'll be released as your time comes. Without any waste of time, the other members will find us on the way. Harda, can you take us through to the through your presentation? Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, Chairperson, as we discussed when we planned this session, I know it's a very long presentation, but I understand there are a number of new members to the committee, and we decided to actually add a little bit more information to the presentation just to give a orientation about who this animal called the Department of Communication is. And we have also, Chairperson, given the file with all the legislation pertinent to this department and the area of our work. It's that big white file that is lying on top there. So it will be available in the committee secretary's office for members to look at the relevant legislation as we go along. We have developed
Honourable Mabija. I think in future the technical staff will have to look at all this so that we cater for everyone. Thanks.
Okay, Chairperson, I'll not make much eye contact, so I'll talk more to this side. Can you hear me better? Okay. All right, we've developed our plan for the MTF period, that is 2009 to 2012, in line with the medium-term strategic framework that was informed by the electoral mandate period. We make sure that what we plan to do are aligned with all the priorities that are in the approved MTSF document. And as members might know, that after the initial budget that was presented by the then Minister of Finance, we got, as department, our allocation, and shortly thereafter, we got a new allocation letter with a severe cut in each budget, not just our department, the whole government. I think the whole government was cut with 19 billion rand. So we had to reprioritize what we planned to do, and as we are implementing now, we're realizing that some of the things that we are saying that we plan to do might still be scaled down. We will still do it, but in a more scaled down manner and not perhaps reaching the targets as stated in the E&E. Our presentation will indicate what are our strategic objectives, the key deliverables, and then also the budget allocation of the MTF period. We have added a little bit more information to adapt the presentation, Chairperson, for the MCOP, to also therefore not just focusing on the strategic issues in terms of our mandate, but also share with you what projects or activities are happening in the provinces. Right, our mandate, which is enshrined in relevant legislation, is to create a favourable ICT, information and communication technology environment that ensures that South Africa has the capacity to advance our socio-economic goals, to support the renewal of Africa and to contribute to building a better world. Within the parameters of this mandate, we've defined our vision as South Africa being a global leader in the development and use of ICTs for socio-economic development. And we aim to achieve this vision through our mission, which is building a better life for all through an enabling and sustainable world-class information and communication technology environment. We have unpacked our mission statement in the following functions. The first is to develop ICT policies and legislation that create conditions for an accelerated and shared growth of the South African economy, which positively impacts on the well-being of all our people and which is sustainable. The next function is to ensure the development of robust, reliable, affordable ICT infrastructure that supports and enables the provision of a multiplicity of applications and services to meet the needs of the country and its people. To strengthen the ICT regulator, ICASA, to enable the regulator to regulate the sector in the public interest and to ensure growth and stability in the ICT sector. The next function is to enhance the capacity of and to exercise oversight over state-owned enterprises as a delivery arms of government. And I do have a couple of slides to introduce the state-owned entities that falls within this portfolio. And then the last function is to fulfill South Africa's continental and international responsibilities in the ICT field. Part of the department is also the Presidential National Commission on Information Society and Development, which was established in 2001 by the former president following a State of the Nation address. And the mandate of this commission is to advise the president on the use of ICTs to optimize the pace and the extent of addressing South Africa's development challenges and enhancing South Africa's global competitiveness, to facilitate the coordinated and integrated development of an inclusive information society in South Africa, and to support efforts aimed at making South Africa and Africa integral and equal members of the global information society. And this is being done so as to assist government to ensure that South Africa does not fall behind the rest of the world as a result of the digital divide. The vision of the PNC is to be leaders on the development of an inclusive information society, and that will be achieved by building an inclusive information society in which human rights, socio-economic prosperity, and participatory democracy are fully realized through optimizing the usage of ICTs for a better life for all. To achieve that mission, the function they've got two core functions, but before I get to that, the role of the PNC is to facilitate the coordinated and accelerate the development of an inclusive information society. And the core functions would be to advise government on building of this inclusive information society and then also to facilitate the development. Now, the department's medium-term strategy map consists of our strategic goals and our strategic objectives. Our first goal is to enable the maximization of investment in the ICT sector. And we aim to achieve that by contributing to creating conditions for an accelerated and shared growth of South African economy through the development and implementation of ICT policies and strategies. Our next goal is to ensure ICT infrastructure is robust, reliable, affordable, and secured to meet the needs of the country and its people. And we will try to achieve that by supporting and enabling the provision of a multiplicity of ICT applications and services through the facilitation of the modernizing of the ICT infrastructure. The third goal is to accelerate the socio-economic development of South Africans by increasing access to, as well as the uptake and usage of ICTs through partnerships with business, civil society, and the three spheres of government. And I think this goal really talks to the work or the issues that the NCOP would be overseeing. We've got four strategic objectives to achieve this goal. The first one is to increase universal access and services to ICTs. The second one is contribute to increasing the ICT skills base in South Africa and increase access to and uptake and usage of ICTs. The third one is to facilitate the growth and development of SMMEs as well as improve their sustainability through the use of ICTs. And the last one is to promote the ICT agenda across all stakeholders in order to ensure integrated and efficient service delivery to communities. Our fourth strategic goal is quite internal looking. It's aimed at how to deal with us as a department, and we aim to build an effective information age organization that contributes to the effective functioning of the FOSA cluster and to contributing to building a single public service. And our objective there is to ensure the optimal functioning of the DOC through building an efficient and effective leadership cadre for the development state and through integrating and aligning operational processes and systems. And our next goal is to enhance the role of ICT SOEs as the delivery arms of government, and our objective there is to provide efficient and effective oversight over these SOEs and other entities. The DOC's last strategic goal is to contribute to building an inclusive information society globally by prioritizing Africa's development. We've got also four strategic objectives there. The first one is to support the African agenda through active participation and implementation of NAIPAD as well as African multilateral and bilateral ICT programs. The second one is to strengthen the South-South cooperation. Third one is we participate in major summits and conferences and implement the outcome thereof. We are signatories and members of key global governance structures looking at ICT matters globally that decides on standards and rules in terms of which ICTs are implemented, and we have to be members and we have to participate in those meetings which go through conferences and summits. And the last objective here is to contribute to creating an enabling internet environment through the development of policies and strategies that positively impact on the well-being of all South Africans. Similarly, the PNC also has a strategic map. The first strategic goal is that the Information Society and Development Plan finds expression on provincial level at all levels of all the governments, the NSDPs, the PDDSs, and the IDPs. And our objective to achieve this goal is leverage political leadership through the ISAT institutional mechanisms, such as the Inter-Ministerial Committee on ISAT, the FOSAT-ISAT Cluster, and the ISAT Intergovernmental Relations Forum. I'll speak a little bit more on the latter later on. The second goal is the Information Society Enabled Youth. The focus is on the youth and ensure that they actively participate in the Information Society programs. The third goal is improve quality of life of the poor by prioritizing the second economy interventions in building the Information Society. Our goal there is to increase the uptake and usage of ICTs by SMMEs, women, youth, people with disability, the non-formal sector, and then as well as the development of ICT SMMEs. The next goal is to integrate and coordinate the building of the Information Society and accelerated and improved service delivery. This will be achieved by the effective functioning of the FOSAT ICET cluster and the IGRF Technical Committee. The next goal is the PNC on ICET is a hub of government machinery for the development of Information Society. And the PNC on ICET, we will achieve that by making the PNC on ICET a model of knowledge-driven organization. Number six is initiate effort in making South Africa and Africa an integral and equal member of the Global Information Society, and we will achieve that by facilitating the sharing of experience and expertise in achieving an inclusive information society, prioritizing the region, the continent, and South Africa. Chairperson, having said this is what we want to achieve, we need to talk about what do we have to do, what we plan to do. So we'll ask the Deputy Director General responsible for finance, Mr. Harry Matabati, to take over this part of the presentation, if it's okay with you.
Before Mr. Matabati
continues. Let me welcome the Honorable Sibande and the Honorable Tau Raserit. We apologize for starting before you arrive.
Thank you very much, Chair, Honorable Members, and Deputy Minister. As the Acting DG indicated, I'll talk briefly to the resources we have to achieve the strategic goals that the Acting DG spoke to. On this slide, I would really focus on the line that is the total budgets of the DOC. I would elaborate later on the details going forward. But the DOC has got a budget of 2.2 billion, which is, if you look through that budget, it's fairly flat. it's fairly flat in the 2009-10, which is 2.2 billion, 2010-11, 2.2 billion again. So if you look at it, we're operating over a three-year period with a very flat budget. That is due in the main to once-off allocations on the 2010 and some of the programs that we run. That's why, to get a better picture, the next line then we say take off once-off items, which the 810 million is primarily 2010, 600 million being for Telkom. And if you minus those, you then would see that the budget is actually, it increases in the second year by 14% and then declines by 2.4%. In part to some of the cuts that the acting DG spoke to. So in a nutshell, the DOC budget is in the region of 1.5 billion, of which the majority, 60%, is for transfers, which I'll talk to just now. Just to get a picture, you know, in a graph format, we have 1.3 billion of that budget being transfers to our state-owned entities. We'll give you a breakdown of those SOEs a bit later, but the bulk of the DOC budget, 2.6 is 1.3 billion, you'll see that the bulk of it goes to the SOEs. Even with that, the next biggest allocation of the 458 million, even that 450 million, actually gets transferred to, in the main, Telkom to meet our 2010 obligations. And the DOC therefore would be left with administration, which houses the minister, deputy minister, and the CEO's office, with about 89 million. So again, this begins to demonstrate that we're really operating on a thin budget. If we can continue. The Acting DG did touch on some of the SOEs that we have in our portfolio. And these are the South African Post Office, which I'm not sure if I should go to those details, but it provides postal services in the country. The SABC, which is a public broadcaster, and it's got two divisions, public broadcasting services and commercial. Centec, being initially its core business was signal distribution for broadcasting, but now it's really, it offers integrated ICT services to the country. And all of these are 100% owned by the state, and they report via the Minister of Communications. We also have got the National Electronics Media Institute of South Africa, which is a training institute that was focusing in its initial phase on broadcasting, and it's now in multimedia. The Universal Service and Access Agency of South Africa, whose aim is to promote universal service and access to communications technologies and services, as well as to manage the Universal Service Fund. The .za Domain Name Authority, established in terms of Chapter 10 of the ECA, to ECT to take responsibility for the .za domain namespace. ICASA is not an SOE. We should have separated that. It's an independent regulator regulating telecommunications and broadcasting in the country. Again, this slide begins to break down the transfers to the SOEs. You will see in the first In the first bars, two bars, the transfers are to Telkom for 2010 FIFA commitments that the minister signed for the country. And you'll see that graph going down from 450 million to 150 million because the cap is coming to an end next year and most of our commitments will be finished. SAPO subsidy, you'll see that going up because inflationary adjustments from 383 to peaking at 430 million, in the main being inflation adjustments. The regulator again, 217 million to 328, going up due to inflation. I think one of our objectives here has always been to capacitate the regulator, and I think 3 years ago, I'm almost convinced that budget doubled. ICASA, you see the budget going down in part to its commitment for 2010 because it's also rolling out some 2010 infrastructure, which you can talk to later. The public broadcaster, it's coming down from 225 million to 85 million, in part due to once-off allocation to modernize its infrastructure. And maybe let me talk to Yusuf, Universal Service and Access Fund, which is going up from 36 million to 280 million. In part, in the main, ICASA has been given the task of rolling out the set-top boxes in the digital migration space. And that's why you see that big jump from 36 to 60 million. Thank you very much.
Deputy Minister, Chairperson, Honourable Members, we have heard now what money we have available, but you have the issue of your human resource capacity for the plan is our organisational structure was approved after a redesign process last year in January, and that new structure has a total number of positions, namely 429. Currently, we have 306 employees filling the positions. Due to the restructuring process, some positions were taken away, so we have 30 staff members. Well, we have 30 staff members additional to the establishment, but we have put a process in place of making sure that the people who were affected by the restructuring has been absorbed into the structure to make sure that basically nobody lost their jobs. But just to put it, because the numbers, if you add up, if you don't put the 30 there, it will not add up to the 429. The current vacant positions is 153. But what is very important to note here, we've got, of that 153, only 77 positions are funded. Because of the cut in the budget, 76 of those positions are unfunded. So we cannot fill them because we do not have the money, but we are prioritizing to filling the vacant positions, those 77 vacant positions. And we actually started last year with that process. What I will focus on now is in the presentation that Harry did on the budget allocation was indicated per program what money is available. And these are the deliverables that we are going to make sure that we deliver in line with our strategic objectives for this financial year. So we have indicated on each slide on the top again what was the MDF allocation over the three-year period, although what we're trying to indicate here is what we plan to achieve over the 3 years with that money. So with a program that focuses on ICT policy development, which is one of our core departments, core branches, is to develop and monitor the implementation of the national broadband policy. We are going to develop an integrated national ICT policy with the intention to develop an integrated national ICT act. The aim of this policy is to make sure that we as a government make a statement and decide where do we want to take the ICT sector. And we do that within the parameters then of this policy and hopefully in the latter part of the MDF period an act. We plan to implement a three-year program of action with regard to reducing the cost to communicate and improving the quality, the availability, and usage of ICTs. And we have a big program running that members might have heard about, is the implementation of the broadcast and digital migration policy. The focus this year, specifically in this program, will be the development of the set-top box manufacturing sector development strategy. We will work on the scheme for ownership support for set-top boxes for poor TV-owning households, and we will also look at the development of a local and digital content development strategy. Also still in the policy development branch, we will make sure with the assistance or through the work with the South African Post Office, the rollout of postal addresses for South African homes and prioritizing rural areas. And then implementation of the outcomes of UPU conferences, specifically the postal conferences. We have a legislative program in place. We plan to table 3 bills this coming year, specifically this year, the first year of the MTF period, the Post Bank Bill, the South African Post Office Limited Bill, and the Public Service Broadcasting Bill. And then we also plan to operationalize the Maraka eSkills Institute. On this point, I just want to add a little bit more information on the Maraka eSkills Institute. South Africa does not compare well with other countries when we talk about ICT skills availability. And although we have in this country numerous initiatives in ICT skills training, there is currently a serious mismatch between what is taught and what skills are actually needed in the workplace. So during the July 2002 Lekgotla, Cabinet approved the conceptual framework for the establishment of the Advanced Institute for ICTs. And this institute comprised of 3 legs. The one is research and development, and there's currently what we call the Maraka Institute that is linked to the CSIR in Pretoria. Applications and development, and then the third leg is skills development and industry-related issues. The latter is where the Maraka eSkills Institute came in, where we basically now start implementing the decision of 2002. So the department is responsible for the third leg around skills development, and the Department of Science and Technology would be responsible for research and development and applications development skills legs. Then on 10 March 2004, Cabinet approved the establishment of this Advanced African Institute on ICT. And then the name, as I mentioned, I said it's called Maraka Institute. In 2005, it was changed to the Maraka Institute, which is under the auspices of Science and Technology Department and situated at the CSIR. The purpose of the Maraka eSkills Institute is to advance quality of life of our people and the workplace readiness of the graduates in an emerging information society and knowledge economy. This institute will leverage existing institutional capacity in a collaborative manner, including the private sector, academia, and civil society. And the aim there is not to ensure that we do not duplicate what is there, but that we build on the strengths that are already there. The key focus areas are eSkills for government, eSkills for business, and eSkills for development. Chairperson, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, the next program is ICT Infrastructure Development Branch. That's also one of our core branches. Our focus will be on the developing and monitoring the implementation of a cybersecurity policy, and this policy will look at how to secure our cyberspace, protect whoever uses that, and then we will also look at establishing the South African National Computer Security Incident Response Team. DDG Matabadi spoke about 2010. We will fulfill our FIFA 2010 World Cup ICT guarantees, and we will facilitate the development and implementation of the 2010 Legacy Plan. We will also develop and facilitate the implementation of the National Radio Frequency Spectrum Usage Policy, which is quite critical because frequency spectrum is a natural finite resource. You can equate it to land. There is just so much of it. And you have to manage the usage and who can use how many parts of it, if I can put it that way, very carefully. And with the coming of the broadcasting different migration process, moving to a digital platform, a lot of frequency spectrum is going to be freed up. And the usage of that free spectrum must be managed very carefully, because in terms of the Polokwane resolution, the issue of frequency spectrum for public use must be prioritized. We also undertake an audit or facilitate the audit of this radio frequency spectrum up to 1,000 gigahertz. With regard to the Dinaledi schools, we will look at coverage of connecting Dinaledi schools with network coverage for the surrounding government institutions. We will develop an e-school connectivity plan and monitor the implementation thereof. We will implement the outcomes of ITU conferences. Now, the ITU is the International Telecommunications Union. It is a specialized body of the United Nations that focuses on any global issues on ICTs. And this is one of the big, as I mentioned earlier, governance bodies that we are members of. And our participation there is critical, because it's this structure that decides on the standards for ICTs, communication. And if we do not participate in that, the standards and the rules are decided for us. And we have to go and protect not just our country, the region as well, but also developing countries, because you are, you know, it's developing countries and developed countries that talk together. So we make sure that we participate and bring it back to South Africa and implement. We will also develop and monitor the implementation of a national internet policy. Our next branch is ICT International Affairs and Trade. Our main deliverables there is that we will support the development of the Uhuru Net, which is a submarine cable, and the Umoja Net, that is a terrestrial cable. This project is a NIPAT project that we are supporting. We will also influence the ICT agenda for South Africa, for SADC and Africa, through our participation in institution of global governance. And you've got African ICT programs, there's multilateral and bilateral ICT programs. IPSA is the India, Brazil, and South Africa Information Society Annual Plan. There's the South-South Cooperation, and then multilateral partnerships with bodies like UNESCO, OECD, European Union, and so on and so forth. ICT enterprise development will look at the growth and increased business efficiency of SMMEs through increased uptake and usage of ICTs and the linkages of ICT enterprises to new opportunities in the sector. And this branch will also be responsible for the oversight, or coordinating the oversight on entities. And in this respect, the focus will be on ensuring alignment of the strategic plans of all the state-owned entities with government priorities, to monitor their performances against the key performance indicators that they have spelled out in their corporate plans, make sure that there's a conclusion of shareholder compact with the minister, and also approve the articles and memorandum of association, which provides a framework for their work. Then there's a program on administration. This program is quite inward-looking, except perhaps for a couple of deliverables. The first one that I wanted to put up there is the issue of develop and implement an e-awareness strategy, prioritizing awareness campaign on broadcasting digital migration. We have to talk to the people to know what is coming, and it is going to be a huge program that is going to be rolled out until the switch off of the analog signal in November 2011. And it will have a strong provincial and local community focus. And what I perhaps can mention here as well, we are going to come back to the NCOP as well as the Parliament to see how we can also provide information to members of Parliament to take it to their constituencies. So the NCOP, the Select Committee, the Portfolio Committee would be also target groups for this awareness campaign. But we will use you, if I can say, use inverted commas, as partners. We promote the integration of the ICT agenda across all spheres of government, and that we do through our intergovernmental relations function. We will be implementing an annual stakeholder engagement strategy Over and above the state of entities, we have this ICT industry and the sector that is out there, and we need to engage with them because our policies also impact on them. We will improve departmental business processes. We will contribute to the government's war on poverty campaign, and we will mainstream issues related to gender, disability, youth, and children in the programs of the department and our state-owned entities. With regard to the PMC on ISAT, the provinces will be supported to incorporate the Information Society and Development Plan into their own provincial development plans. The PMC will support the effective functioning of the eSkills Council and facilitate the implementation of its recommendations. We will develop and implement a youth e-cooperative sustainability strategy, and we will have an e-literacy training program for children in conflict with the law. It will be developed this year and we will start implementing. The PMC will also develop and implement a training program on computer-based functional literacy for rural women within all the provinces. The National Digital Repository on Cultural Heritage will be fully operational. The e-content SMME strategy will be developed and implemented, and there will be effective and adequate measurement of the Information Society development in South Africa to support decision-making on a broader level. And then the PMC will also provide secretariat and professional support to the institutional mechanisms. As we mentioned before, and I know we're harping quite a lot on it in terms of our budget that has been cut, we then, as the management, in the beginning of this year, sat and decided, if at that time we didn't know how much was going to be cut. So we identified five priority areas which are non-negotiables we have to do. What we've listed there is broadcast and digital migration, issues around national radio frequency spectrum, cybersecurity, affordable and reliable, robust and secure ICT infrastructure, focusing specifically on broadband policy, reducing the cost and the rollout of the national address system, and then activities around Information Society and Development Hubs programs, which I mentioned just now when I spoke about the PNC activities. As I mentioned before, we might have to scale down on some of these, but we will do all of this, perhaps just in a smaller scale. Chairperson, honourable members, from here on, we've decided to add these slides to get into more what is our mandate, or how do we interact with the provinces, or what do we do on provincial level. I have to start by saying that the DOC has no concurrent function in the provinces. There's one department, an international department. Our state-owned entities, as was introduced by Harry, they are the delivery arms of the department. They implement our policies, and through our oversight, we make sure that they do deliver it. Now, in 2004, process started because there were a number of national departments with no concurrent functions in the provinces, and that creates the problem. I come from a department where there was a MINMEC, you know, and it makes it so much easier to interact on provincial and local level. So the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act encourages cabinet members to establish this national intergovernmental relations forum to facilitate and promote policy and related matters in their functional areas. And that is specifically for the departments with no concurrent functions. So within the parameters of this act, the former and the late Minister of Communications launched what we call the Information Society and Development Intergovernmental Relations Forum in December 2006. In compliance with this act, this forum is a consultative forum for the minister to first raise ICT matters of national interest with provincial government and organized local government and to hear their views on those matters, to consult provincial governments and organized local government on developing national policy and legislation relating to matters affecting ICTs in their functional areas, monitoring and implementation of the policies and legislation in the provinces, and coordinating and aligning ICTs with the functional areas of strategic and performance plans, as well as priorities across the three spheres of government. And this forum is also aimed at providing to discuss performance in the provision of services in order to detect failures and to initiate preventive and corrective actions when necessary. So it's basically what amendment we do. So in our case, we've defined the objectives of the IGR forum as the following: to serve as a consultative forum, as I explained now, with respect to ICT matters across all three spheres of government, facilitate the building of an inclusive information society across all spheres of government in an integrated and coordinated manner, and to contribute to the development of ICT policies, programs, and the coordinated implementation of initiatives so as to increase the impact of ICTs in support of more effective, efficient, and timely service delivery. So in accordance also with the Act, the membership consists of 23 permanent members. Our minister would be the chairperson. The first deputy chairperson would be the Minister of Public Service and Administration. The second deputy chairperson is the Deputy Minister of Communications. Then, with the assistance of the premiers, we will have 18 MECs. They will nominate 2 MECs per province, one dealing with economic matters and the other one with socio-economic matters. The chairperson of SALGA is a member, as well as the chairperson of the National House of Traditional Leaders. And this is basically where we, on a very formal manner, try and make sure that what we do find voice on provincial and local level. But we are involved in some specific projects within our national mandate, if you want to call it that, in the provinces that I want to share with the Select Committee. The first is some of the activities of the Meraka Skills Institute. They intend to engage with Limpopo, KZN, and the Eastern Cape for pilot sites for the FIFA 2010 Legacy Project. These sites will focus on the youth of ICTs in social networking and the building of social cohesion. Last year, or earlier this year, a community-based e-skill seminar was held in Siyabuswa in Mpumalanga, and plans are being developed for similar activities in the rural areas in the Eastern Cape and the Western Cape provinces. A memorandum of understanding and a collaborative project involving 3 to 4 provinces, well, basically it's Gauteng, Western Cape, Limpopo, and KZN, is being pursued with Cisco. This will involve the engagement of the Cisco Public Service in developing a market program which involves activities in more than 130 economies. With regard to broadband, our ICT infrastructure development branch will work with provinces on their provincial broadband strategies and implementations. And we've also started the process with municipalities, getting the municipalities together to talk about broadband, and we will take it forward this year. We are going to target 2,500 young people in all, across all provinces to participate in the National Youth ISAT, the Information Society and Development Program, to increase their economic participation. 100 eco-operatives will be established to increase entry of youth-owned small enterprises into the ICT sector. I mentioned earlier the issue of the connectivity of Dinaledi schools, that there will be Dinaledi schools in all 9 provinces. We were also targeting 900 women in construction to be listed on the e-commerce construction web portal to increase business exposure and sustainability. And with regard to mainstreaming of ICT-related issues for the benefit of designated groups, meaning women, children, youth, and persons with disability, some of the key, and there's many activities, I just focused on some key activities. There's a leadership and ICT seminar for young women that will be held in the Western Cape province. All provinces will be invited, all provinces will send representatives, but it will be held in Western Cape. And that means Western Cape can bring more delegates. And then we will undertake a review summit on the children and ICT strategy and current sector ICT policy discussions, and this will be held in the Free State province. Then we also have a program, a national ICT work program with the Institution of Traditional Leadership. We have a 3-year program that is wholly funded by the DOC and focused on the following areas of work: the development of websites for the national houses, provincial houses, and local houses of traditional leaders, digitization of information in the provincial houses of the regional leaders and the ICT literacy training program to increase the uptake and usage of ICTs by traditional leaders. I'm sharing with you what we've done last year because this year we're planning to build on it. So last year we developed websites for all the provincial houses of traditional leaders, and we also launched the National House of Traditional Leaders website. We had a publication on the establishment of the traditional authorities, what their roles and functions are, and how this institution is partnering with the DOC to build an inclusive information society. So for this year, we plan to develop 22 websites for local houses of traditional leaders. We will introduce the ICT literacy training program at 8 of the provincial houses of traditional leaders. The digitization of information residing in the provincial houses of traditional leaders will be undertaken, particularly focusing on the following material: the traditional court's judgments, the House of Committee proceedings, heritage and cultural information on each traditional leader serving in a provisional House of Traditional Leader Executive Committees. And we plan to host the second annual ICT seminar on the institution of traditional leadership. And then with our assistance, there's community radio stations that are on the air, and I've indicated the number of stations on the air currently fully licensed in all of the provinces. I won't go into the detail, you have it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DG and your team. Honorable Joe, don't you want to have the first bite before you leave?
I think seeing that it's my first experience of communication,
okay,
I'm trying to absorb information. Thanks.
All right. Honorable members, we've been listening to the presentation of the Department of Communication, and now is our time to ask questions for clarity and also questions that we really want to pose to the department. I'll start with the cybersecurity. I think we are all aware the announcement in the media of that the mobile service providers, they are going to require to register the SIM card, current SIM card holders. So if we look, we've got rural areas where we don't really have like the physical address. What are we going to do? What is the department, maybe the post office, or how is the department going to assist in making sure that when 18 months is over, people will have been registered? And how are we going to make people aware in those rural areas? And then the other one is the digital signal that was switched off October 2008, which marked the commencement of the dual illumination period for South Africa. What is the progress of the on this pilot project, and when can the rollout of the dual illumination to the general public be expected? I'll come back. Honorable members, Honorable Mlenzana, Honorable Groenewald, Honorable Mabitja, in that order.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Just like Honorable Tao, one is more
learning than wanting to begin to solve serious questions and things like that. But Chair, I'll start from the back of the presentation. Let me start by appreciating the work that the department is doing in our rural towns through those community radio stations on air. I know.
I listened carefully when introductions were made. There's a Dr. Buluka Mashio.
Who was that person?
He has been to the Eastern Cape visiting Alpha Tizo Community Radio, and we were looking forward because when you're looking at that particular radio station on Alpha Chapasin, it's more assisting almost half of the province, the whole eastern part of the Eastern Cape is covered by Alpha Tizo Community Radio, but now, for whatever reason, it's suffering from funding, but we are looking at perhaps the visit done will bear some fruit. I will also, when I'm doing the oversight work over this period, to the Honorable Chair, try to interact with this person and the station manager so that we assist each other. Then, Chair, also just to be schooled on the vacancy rate portrayed there. I was pleased, Chairperson, when they are able to categorize that there are those which are funded and those which are not funded. But my interest would be of this now, the unfunded, the 76, the nature of them. Are there no critical positions that, yes, the DG was saying you are busy prioritizing? The chairperson covered me on the mobile phone registration thing, but one would just want to understand how central is the department in the whole question of registration there. Then lastly, I was also more interested on the co-ops, the cooperatives. Now, DG is saying this is a national department and you are struggling getting link with the provinces down to the local government. Now, what's your plan of establishing this cooperative? Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'll start with the vacancies we've got in the department. You mentioned there are 360 employees in the department at this stage, but there are also 153 vacancies. Now, what I want to know, what kind of vacancies is it? And you also mentioned it is because of a lack of a fund. That is why the most of these vacancies are not filled. But is it technically, or is it administration vacancies? I just want to know, where is the center of the most of these vacancies? And what effect had it on the department? Because that is a lot of vacancies. 153 is really a lot. I want to know what is the effect at the end of the day on the because of these vacancies in the department. And then the Uhuru Net project, that is just for information. How far is we with this project and how are involved in this project and how many countries are also involved in this project? And who funded? Is it all the countries, or where did we get the funds to have this project happen at the end of the day? And my last question is the digital migration process we've had on the way now. And you mentioned also a date, 2011, then it must be completed. What will happen thereafter? Is there a cut-off date that they will stop it? And what will happen with the people who haven't got these facilities at that stage? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. As I was listening, when the DG has been presenting, I never heard anything mentioned in conjunction with the 500,000 jobs promised by the President by the end of this year, that is December 2009. So I'll just request her to indicate the targeted number out of that 500,000 by this department and how they are going to kickstart that to ensure that by the end of this year that they have met their target number. Thank you.
I quickly managed to pick up something. The, you know, DG, during the presentation of the strat plan and the budget of the Department of Education, they raised this thing of revolutionizing the information technology in schools. Now, this matter is raised in your strat plan as well, of the expansion of the ICT to the Denali schools and so forth. Now, the immediate question that comes to mind is, who budgets for this? From which budget does this come from? Does it come from the education department, or does it come from your department, or are you working closely with the education department to roll out this program? Coupled to that, of course, would be to what extent is the program being implemented? Probably I might have missed it. How far are you with that kind of a program? And one small link to that, what impact does it, are you seeing results thus far? I mean, in terms of what you have done. If there's nothing that has been done, it's fine. If it's still in the pipeline, probably also one would want to know how long would the pipeline be, because sometimes the pipeline can be just too long before the matter is then implemented. The second issue, Chair, which I really caught my attention, is the e-cooperatives for young people. As a National Council of Provinces, immediately what comes to my mind is, hey, I wonder how many cooperatives are going to be established in the Northern Cape in relation to this objective by the department. It would have been good if maybe we might have had a breakdown to say, in each province, this is the amount of e-coops that we have established, that we're working on establishing. These are the young people that we've recruited. This is how far the program is, and so forth. So that even during our period when we are home in our constituencies, we are able also not only to monitor, but to look at young people who have got an interest, who have got the capacity and the skill, and the zeal, of course, to be involved in ICT things, who might not necessarily, due to lack of information, be drawn into the programs and so forth. Then that's where our role obviously would be quite strategic in identifying these young people and informing them about some of these things. The last one, I don't know if the chair is it linked to yours, because communication, man, your vocab, you use something else, and now I see digital migration, and I'm asking myself whether it is the same thing. This change from H, from what D to HD, and the poor, how are they going to be subsidized? And you would understand what I mean, but I'm getting there. Don't worry. We've got 5 years. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson.
So let me ask this one before I forget. Your one of your functions is to enhance capacity in exercising the oversight over state-owned enterprises as the delivery arm of government. So the public broadcaster is actually faced with challenges of governance, management capacities, and financial management, which has led to the dissolution of the board. I don't know, you know, if I can just get out of this meeting without asking this one, it would be fair. When did you actually be aware of these challenges as the department, and what have you done to address the challenges, and what is the proposed funding model for SABC, and what mechanisms do you have in place to ensure that such challenges are detected early and addressed timelessly? And then can you give us the, with your human resource, if you can maybe give us the plan of the department, the breakdown, not the plan, the breakdown in the staff establishment in terms of race, gender, and disability status. Thanks. We'll still come to that.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. This is where the team DLC is going to come into action now. That's why my colleagues are here. They're not here to listen just to me, but they are also here to assist in answering some of the questions. So I will dish it out. With regard to, Chairperson, your question about the registration of the SIM cards, I'm going to hand that over to Mr. Nhlapo, because your question is about basically how can we make sure that people are registered, especially in the rural areas. Before you answer, I don't know if you've heard the announcement where SAPO actually made a statement that they will, accelerate or the rollout of addresses to facilitate or assist in this process. But I'll ask Mukuning just to elaborate on that matter.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Maybe just a brief background on the Regulation on Interception of Communication Act, because the SIM card is happening within the RICA Act. That act was driven by the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, not our department, but because now it applies in our sector, we had to come in. Negotiations took place for over a period of 2 to 3 years because the operators were saying that this was going to be a very difficult process to manage, but also there were clear policy imperatives to be saying that these cell phones are being used in crime. And then we need to find a way as law enforcement agencies to intercept the communication that is happening. So after a very long process of consultation, the law was signed by the president early this year. And as the chair said, it gives the operators about 18 months to sign all SIM cards. It will be mostly prepaid SIM cards because contract SIM cards, the operators would have your addresses. Now, this is where we came in after the law, and then we approached all the cell phone operators as the department to say that we are seeing an opportunity here, one, to assist. The law leaves it with the operators. It is the operators who have to see how in that 18 months they register. But for us, there were two things. One, we were seeing an opportunity to bring in young people because we have had a number of initiatives that are aimed at bringing in young people into the ICT sector, to be saying, unlike other sectors, be it the public works and all that, this is one sector where you find that it is difficult to bring young people. So we approached the operators to say, we are seeing an opportunity for a national youth service here where we could have something similar to what we have with the IEC, when the IEC goes about registration, where we are saying to them that we could train young people and then these young people go out to communities and then they can register house to house, get into house to house to register for SIM cards. Now, we have had a number of meetings with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development and operators. There are challenges. And the challenge, one, is that operators feel that issue of the dead data of the SIM cards, it is their business, if you like, intelligence. Today, you don't know how many SIM card Vodacom has, or you don't know how many MTN has. But they have not closed us down altogether, Chairperson. They said they were going to consider our proposal, and this is to say we are prepared to train young people, and then we want them to pay the stipend. The law doesn't force them to do that, but we are seeing an opportunity to create jobs for young people, and they said that they were going to come back to us. The approach, Chairperson, that we wanted to use, as I say, we have taken the model that is used by the IEC, which looks at communities. You will then divide the areas in terms of from provinces to district municipalities, and then you will identify young people in those district municipalities, provide them training, and then they are the ones who goes into, these are young people who would be known into communities and know the area, and then they will be the ones who go about registration. As I say, operators are still considering our proposal. We have had a number of meetings. Maybe with the support of the select committee, we could have things moving faster. Chairperson, with the operators, to say, can you support this? It's a good initiative, job creation, and so on. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson, I want Mr. Nshop to deal with the questions of e-cooperatives. But before he deals with it, I just want to touch on the question that was asked by the honourable members about our, within the commitment made in the State of the Nation of Death about the 500 jobs created and what specifically did the DOC target in terms of those 500,000 jobs. Now, I must be honest, we didn't take the 500,000 and said, well, we're going to target about 10,000. But what I can say, a lot of our activities, and I think one of the examples that Mokwini mentioned now is issues around job creation. I think if you talk to the e-cooperatives, we talk about the possibility of job creation, skilling people so that they can enter into the market. Our program on mainstreaming ICTs within the youth sector. We've got programs there. Last year we had a program of training, I think, about over 400. This year we're going to start rolling out the process of employing those people. We could, in terms of more detail, come back with a detailed program, but to answer the honourable member's question, we can't say of that 500,000 we targeted 1% or what. We carry on with our programs and we see it as our contribution towards that 500,000. So if Mr. McLaughlin then can deal with all the questions that were asked around the e-cooperatives.
Thank you, Tishy. Honorable Chair and honorable members, the concept of the e-cooperatives started 2 years ago in 2007. What we were looking at was that there are challenges of enterprise development within the ICT sector. It's a highly skilled sector that needs, for people to start SMMEs, they have to have that skill. And we were looking at what business models that we were looking at that can accelerate entry into the ICT sector. We then look at the cooperatives as a model, and then studied what different countries have done, and we found that in most developing countries around South America, Argentina, Brazil, they have applied the cooperative as a model in the ICT sector. We then partnered with a number of institutions, the university, Tshwane University of Technology, CIPRO and CIDA in the Department of Trade and Industry, Umsobofu Youth Fund, to look at establishing e-cooperatives. What we were looking at was to say we have to recruit young people from the provinces, and I think the honorable member asked how many or whether the program is already underway. Currently we have 96 cooperatives that have been established nationally. And the breakdown, if I can just quickly go through the breakdown in terms of the number of cooperatives in the different provinces. In Mpumalanga we've got 10 cooperatives. In Northwest we've got 20 cooperatives. In Northern Cape we've got 10. In the Eastern Cape we've got 7. In Gauteng, we've got 11. In Limpopo, we've got 22 cooperatives. In Free State, we've got 13. In the Western Cape, we've got 5. In KZN, we've got 20. Now, these are cooperatives that have been established. What we did in establishing these cooperatives, we worked with Umsobomfu, as I said, and the National Youth Commission to identify young people in the provinces. We didn't identify young people. Young people were identified at a provincial level, and they were sent to us. So in a cooperative, as honorable members may know, different members of the cooperatives have got different roles and that they contribute into a cooperative. So we would then say, if you take a cooperative to have 10 young people, two of these young people would have to have ICT technical training. So we would then, out of all this cooperative, bring the young people who we will take through the technical training for them to can set up a network. And then from there, we then ask CIDA to provide business management and financial management in terms of the running of the business, the marketing of the business. This was the training that was provided by the Small Enterprise Development Agency through its offices in the different provinces. And then from there, CIPRO came in to give them what the cooperative as a model and how it works and what are the expectations in terms of a member. Because it's a different from an SMME or an enterprise. When you are operating in a cooperative, it's a different business model. So they were taken through that training, and then from there, they were registered as cooperatives. Now, what we have been battling with from last year is how do we sustain these cooperatives. It's one thing to call young people to train them and to register a cooperative. What is important is for you to say, how do you sustain them? Because it will, you will impact on issues of poverty when the cooperatives are sustainable and are working. And then what we have looked at are a number of models. In Mpumalanga.
Before you continue, if maybe I can just, if we can be cleared of what criteria. What criteria are you using to actually, you know, get those young people? If you can select, yeah, the selection process, because you talked of the National Youth Commission, and in provinces we still have the provincial youth commissions. Of which, are they aware of what's happening? Yes, Umsobomfu was still there. But is the provincial youth commissions part and parcel? How do you do your selection? If you can also incorporate that in your response.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, Chairperson, we worked with the National Youth Commission through the provincial offices. And what we said a very simple criteria, that these young people must be unemployed, and these young people must have a matric. That was a simple criteria that we gave to the National Youth Commission, and then that they gave to the Provincial Youth Commission. Our understanding, the project manager who's working, our understanding was that then the National Youth Commission would then, through the Provincial Youth Commission, identify these young people. These young people were not identified by us. They were identified at a province by the Provincial Youth Commission. In conclusion, I was just saying, Chairperson, on the e-cooperative, we have now 96, and what we have been looking at, and in this current financial year, I think what the acting DG presented is the sustainability strategy. How can we sustain them? We have looked at, we have worked on a model in Mpumalanga and Northwest. This was to work with municipalities. We then provided the young people with website development skills for them to work with municipalities in terms of upgrading and maintaining their websites. That is working, and we were paying, as a department, we were paying for these cooperatives, but we found that that is not sustainable. We have a model that we are working on, and we have approached the Kula, and they are looking at the model of a community digitization program. Here we have taken, on a community digitization program, we have taken a number of models. We have taken a Tucson Service Center model, and we have combined that with an internet cafe model, where we are saying in an urban and peri-urban area you can have internet cafe, where these young people actually can approach the funding institutions to fund them to establish the internet cafes. But in the rural areas, you find that you won't have that traffic of internet cafe. Then here we are looking at having something like a community digitization center, where you would then maybe say, in this rural areas, you find that schools do not even have ICTs or computers. So then this center can be a center where even whether it's primary schools or schools around there can access ICTs or internet through those centers. We are still looking at the model because it's more about the funding, if we can get the necessary funding. But we are in discussions with Kula. We had there's discussions with Umsobom, who were at an advanced stage before it was dissolved. We had even signed it, but we are looking at really sustaining this, and then we are looking at that community digitization centers. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think if we can deal now with a question about the Dinner Lady schools, I'll ask Ms. Khorom to start answering the questions about the project of the connectivity, the sites where they've done something, and if not, why not, and so on. I know within the ISAC cluster, the issue of working together with the Department of Education. Yes, we do work closely with them, and if you feel, Honourable Member, that we need to expand on what Mokwening can perhaps add to that. But if Anna, can you just deal then with the question of the Dinner Lady School project?
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chairperson. I think if I may answer that sort of as in two legs. First of all, what we're doing with education, working together with them, and then relatively specific to Dinner Lady as well. If I can start, we have a directorate that is dedicated to working with the Department of Education, and we are working closely with them on various projects. What we've discovered, looking specifically at Dinner Lady, and you'll realize that in many of your provinces, there are loose initiatives for connectivity to schools. There's an initiative here, there's an initiative there, there's the Dinner Lady Schools project. And in the beginning of the year, end of last year really, we sat together with education and said, how do we go about coordinating all these things? And we are currently working with the National Department of Education saying, how do we want to connect schools? Do we want to connect schools? If so, how? What is there? Must there be a centralized national model for doing this? Because I think you'll be aware that the Department of Education has done a feasibility study on the use of ICTs in education.
and that it's an issue close to their hearts and, of course, close to ours as well. So with education, we are, and together with the PNC as well, we are developing a connectivity plan for schools in general that will specify how will schools be connected, why will they be connected, is there a process, what must they have before they can be connected, et cetera, et cetera. And then also a very important component of that is the funding of connectivity to schools, because you will also know that, that 50% just more or just less, I can't recall, of the schools we have in this country are no-fee schools, which meaning that the only money they're getting is coming from Treasury. So bearing that in mind and also remembering how important it is to use ICTs in schools, there is a funding question that needs to be addressed there. And if I can then from that angle move over to the Dinaledi project. The Dinaledi project is intended to connect specifically the Dinaledi schools. Now, the Dinaledi concept is not a concept from the Department of Communications. It is a concept coming from education. There's 500 schools around the country in various provinces that they have identified that get special, well, that is handled specially, that focuses on maths and science specifically. So when the connectivity of schools and other government institutions was a project of the Department of Communications, they were decided that, that probably it's a good idea to start with schools and then specifically with the Dinaledi schools throughout the different provinces. Now, in the project is coming along for a while. There are various legs of it. There is the building of the infrastructure through the state-owned entities. And then there's, from education side, the development of the schools and making sure that when connectivity does get to the schools, there are computers there available and that the teachers are trained. In that leg, you'll also see the involvement of USASA, the Universal Service and Access Agency of South Africa, that is working together with education to help subsidize computers into the schools. Now, as to the budget and who's paying for it, who is education budgeting for it, is the DOC budgeting for it, I think that that is one of the components of this project that has been making it difficult to get it done as fast as we want to, because there is an issue there about who's paying for the capital and who's paying for the operation or not. There is funding available within the state-owned entities and within the Department of Communications looking at the capital of this, and it's the budget constraints is also... we're also having a look at the project to see how are we prioritizing and how are we delivering. Are we using the funds available for CapEx, for OpEx only, for the combination of that? Looking at the results, I can't tell you what the results is specifically from ICTs that connected the Dinaledi schools from this project, because there are, haven't been any schools connected. But if you look at the feasibility study from education, it shows that the positive effect that this can have, and there are also some of these schools that are connected by other means where you can definitely see the results, but not from this project. I think that should address most of it.
Thank
you. Just before that, so that I don't come back to you again. Except that I would suggest that DOC must then engage with the Department of Education, because the impression created is such that there is a budget for such purpose by the department. There is an amount of money set aside by the department. So it would be important that you speak to them and check whether if it is true there is that money available. I think it will resolve the problem of who pays for the operational costs and who pays for the capital cost, the installation things, and all those sorts of things. And of course, I mean, expand. What is the role of the private sector in particular? To what extent has it also been mobilized to then also have a buy-in into this whole project? Because not only is it a departmental matter, but it's a clarion call that has been put to the country by the president. How then do we also ensure that we mobilize other sectors to then play a role in that. Thanks.
Chairperson, can I just ask?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry. If
you allow me, I'm not taking them back on some of the things triggering me on what was raised by my colleague the other side. No, I wanted to ask a question to Mr. Ntlapo, that one, unfortunately. That, he indicated that cooperatives are 96 national. What criteria is being used? Because I think there is a discrepancy. These cooperatives are not the same. In Gauteng, in Mpumalanga, it's 10. Other provinces, 5. Other provinces, 11. You see? Because another thing which I'd like to bring to your attention, you see, sometimes I'm from the rural area. I'm from Mpumalanga. You see, I don't know also... Yes. Yes. Sometimes, you know, to me, it's very disturbing only to find that maybe the concentration of some departments, they're concentrating in a, maybe one area, like go to Nelspruit, all the nitty-gritties are there. But if you look in our province geographically, it can tell you where's the mistake. How can we rectify such things? Because there are people who are still suffering who doesn't enjoy some of the contribution from the government side. Like, you go to Pietrotis, you go to where the late Solomon Khiza was assassinated in Trufondin and the like. They don't know some of these things. You go to Bushbuck Ridge, still experiencing problems. Even within the state itself, you go to Mbuzini, in the far side of the Lofon part. So, if maybe you can clarify us, so that in return, because ourselves who are deployed, as people who are working in the constituency offices, who are going to recess, so that you can maybe assist to recommend to the department to disseminate some of the, to distribute itself in the province against the person.
Okay, Mr. Nchapo, and also when you respond, then if you don't have this information, you'll send it to us. Of the cooperative's contact, so that during our constituency period, we are able to really, you know, visit them, as the Honorable Dawu was saying. We are, when I come here, then I say I did go and see Caesar Band Cooperative. You know, the contacts. If you don't have them, you will send them to us.
No, thanks, Chair. You did. Thanks, sir. I think the list of the addresses, the name, the addresses, contact, everything of the cooperatives would be sent to the committee. Chair, on the uneven distribution of this 96 cooperatives in provinces. Let me start by saying, if you look at, for example, Northwest, which has got the highest, I can give you the reason why it's got the highest. One, this project, when we landed, normally, like when we started and had finalized the concept of the e-cooperatives, we invited Provincial Economic Affairs Department, which is where cooperatives are in the provinces. We invited them to a workshop. DTI was there, presented all our partners in the project. Now, in Northwest, what happened was that the Premier's office and the provincial GITO, that is a government IT officer, who now understand IT, was the person who was tasked with this project. Now, the project got that prominence in the province because it was seen as a flagship project of the Premier then at the time. Now, we depend on provinces. We requested them to send us the number of people. In fact, we never even limit them in terms of the number of people that they have to send us. All that we said was that, obviously, those that we are going to train on ICTs. For example, if you've got 10 young people who are going to form a cooperative, we are not going to take all the 10 young people and train them on ICTs. Isn't it that there will be two who are technical, and then there will be other two who will be trained by other institutions? CEDA will give some financial management, as I've explained the model. So this was not of our own making, quite frankly, to have this, what to call, discrepancies across the different provinces. It was because of the trials that came from the province themselves. And the Northwest province, they were really in the forefront, and you could see not only, because in the end, when we established the cooperative, we wanted to know what support we were going to get into the province. They made sure that in Northwest, municipalities, as and when this cooperative are established, municipalities can give these young people, we call it a period of incubation, where they are there in municipalities, where they develop a website and all that. And we were saying, the province or the municipality doesn't have to pay. The department was the one. I was fighting with the CFO here because I was saying to him that, look, if we don't pay for these cooperatives, municipalities would say, but you are not bringing us costs, so we pay for them. So my answer is that really this was because of the province's enthusiasm and them driving. And going forward, we have stopped now recruiting and establishing the cooperatives with the main aim of getting that sustainability strategy. And once we are done this year and we have the funding institutions on board, we are going to continue to establish other cooperatives. And I think at that stage we would have the support of the select committee in terms of the different provinces and young people. It's our intention, aim to make sure that we establish more of these cooperatives. But we felt that we now have to stop, take stock and say, but we can't just continue to establish them. We need to be saying, how do we make them sustainable? And this year was is our focus on looking at that sustainability strategy.
Okay, thanks. When I asked you what criteria, I think I was in line.
Yeah.
With what the honorable member is saying, and you said you look at the unemployed and the metric. I was, you know, thinking you would say gender, and then also geographical spread. Because if you just tell them unemployed and metric, maybe if we can dig and find the truth of the whole, we'll find out maybe, let's say as we are from Mpumalanga, maybe it's only from Kanyamazane, if it's fine. Because maybe even the time frame that was given was just, you know, just a short period, not looking at how can the people, how will they arrive at, you know, the Umsobomvu offices. So if you can add the gender part of it, and then also the geographical spread, I think, and we will actually, as this committee, we will monitor that. Thanks. We'll assist.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson, honourable members. I'll ask Ms. Pasani Baloyi, the Acting Chief Operations Officer, to deal with all the questions related to the personnel.
Thanks, Chair. First, I would like to say that, you know, when the structure was approved last year in January, it changed completely. That is, it brought in a lot of new positions at a senior management service level. So currently what we have, I think, I'll start with the gender breakdown, is that of the entire DOC staff, we've got 56%, you know, gender representativity, that is meaning that we've got 50%, 56% females, and the rest it's actually males. And then across the department. And then in terms of disability, we are sitting at 2.2%. And
honorable members, it can be 56%, but the positions, you know.
I'm coming to that, Chair.
Okay.
At senior management service level, we are sitting at 45% gender equity. So, yes, so 45% of the SMS, you know, members are females. So we hope that we're going to achieve it by the end of this year. Thank you. Coming to the question on, you know, what kind of positions are vacant, as I've indicated, you know, most of the positions are very critical. Of those positions that were mentioned as vacant, 62 of those are senior management service, at senior management service level. But what we try to do is, even for the period starting from April last year, we prioritize according to our own, you know, top priorities. For instance, for this year, what we regard as top priorities, you know, we're going to start at that level to ensure that, you know, all those branches and chief directorates responsible for those top priorities are well capacitated. So that is our plan. And obviously, we do not always get what we ask for from Treasury, and we can't actually, you know, rob Peter, you know, from another program, you know, to fund positions. That is mainly limited. And that will have, obviously, an impact. But we try, you know, by all means to have a balanced structure, you know, in terms of achieving, you know, our mandate on a year-to-year basis. And the other challenge that we have is that when you look at some of the critical priorities, I would like to mention, you know, a few that are critical for us, that we never had a unit responsible for e-content development, which now is fairly new and needs to be capacitated because of its critical for digital broadcasting migration. So in essence is that we always have a plan, and as and when we've got an opportunity to reprioritize, we do so to ensure that whatever is of importance at that particular point in time, you know, we've got enough capacity to can deliver on those objectives. Thank you.
Yeah. In addition to you, do you in your in the department have a gender focal point? That is, I mean, the monitoring, and then maybe if you can tell us is at the level that somebody who's dealing with that has. Is at the level of a chief director or a director, and what stuff do you have? Thanks.
Yes, Chair, we do have. I'm accountable, you know, in terms of employment equity, you know, in the department, and there is a director and a deputy director, you know, responsible for employment equity and transformation and change management. So we've got, you know, an employment equity plan which outlines as to which ones are targeted positions. And obviously that we look at even the labor market. For instance, when we look at the ICT skills across the organization, we try by all means, you know, to find that, you know, the although they are critical skills, but we also promote diversity, you know, in all, you know, branches. So we do have, you know, resources that are currently looking at that, and they get assessed also on that achievement. That's why we have moved, you know, 2 years ago, you know, from 31% up to 45%.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll ask the CFO to answer a fruit salad of questions. The question on community radios, to your question on the public broadcaster, and as well as the question on Uhurinet.
Thank you. Acting DG, Chairperson, and honorable members. I thought I should just touch and just indicate to say, insofar as gender is concerned, almost saving for one, all our SOEs are headed by women as chairpersons, and a significant number of them is CEOs. So I think it's really an area where the late minister was very passionate about. So I thought I'd touch on that. I also thought on our collaboration with Department of Education. My colleague has spoken to that, but I thought I would say that Dinaledi was, if you like, a pilot project of the department that we had wanted to use Dinaledi as an entry point to begin to showcase what the value that ICTs can play in promoting not only education, but health, SMMEs, and other spheres of government. And in this regard, Dinaledi was coordinated via the ICET cluster, where we had the various departments, education, health, DOC, And in this regard, DOC's contribution would have been infrastructure, development, education, which was partaking actively. Contribution would have been content development. I must agree with the sentiments that we need to look at other players, and maybe that's why our minister, you would have noted in the budget vote speech, he indicated as one of his priorities the rollout of ICT infrastructure in rural areas, and this would include the schools. Now, to my questions, Chair, I thought I'd start with the easy one, the SABC. I thought I'd start with the easy one, Chair, because I don't think you'll let me leave here without answering a question on the SABC. When we presented, we did indicate that on an annual basis, the minister, who is the shareholder representative of government, would enter into a shareholder compact with a board. And the shareholder compact regulates the relationship between the department and the SABC in this regard. It will set out key performance measures that we wanted the SABC to achieve, and this will be aligned to government or departmental objectives. Now, ordinarily, when you set up a performance agreement, you would monitor the performance agreement over a period of time, usually a year. And in this case, we'll do that because the question you asked was, what does the DOC do? You know, usually on a quarterly basis, we would look at the reports. We get quarterly reports from the SOEs, look at the reports to the extent where they are achieving their objectives. And of course, for various reasons, some will be achieved, some won't be achieved, because in a business plan, you make assumptions. And we'll do that quarterly. Twice a year, the late minister would meet with the boards of SABC and any other entity to look in part at the delivery of the organization. And the issues at the SABC we did pick up quite early. Minister rigorously interacted with the board and informed them that there are challenges that needed to be fixed. Suffice to say that that board was in place for a period of about 18 months, and in that period, the minister was beginning the temperature. She was the late minister raising the temperature of the issues to be addressed, and in the midst of all, you had a change of administration. The other challenge that we had with the SABC that is currently being looked at had to do with the legislation. Because the legislation provides for the Portfolio Committee on Communication to oversee the nomination process. The president appoints the board members. The Minister of Communication has got day-to-day oversight. So you would find no single authority have got complete control over the performance of a particular board. And it's an area, again, where the Minister of Communication, Minister Nyanda, has indicated that we'll be looking at the SAPC bill to bring in line some of those challenges. But in a nutshell, we are aware of it, and we were working very hard with the SAPC to resolve those issues. That was the easy one, Chairperson. To go to the difficult ones, I'll start on UhuruNet. To say that it's well progressed. We work in accordance with the protocol that was signed with African states that we're partaking in the rollout of UhuruNet. The protocol, which is called the Kigali Protocol, provides for at least 12 members for that to become operative. And currently, we have about 14 countries which are signatories to the protocol. The work is quite advanced, funding of which by PEDIF, PEDIF, which is, if you like, the African entity that uses pension funds to roll out in major infrastructure. And they are currently favorably looking at funding, and some of those outstanding issues is the funding issue. And once we have financial closure, we will then proceed constructing the network. Government is not paying anything. The SA government is not paying anything in terms of the rollout of UhuruNet. It will be privately funded by commercial enterprises and developmental institutes. On on community radio stations, we would pass the message to Dr. Buluka and make sure that when we come back, he's here with us to maybe give further information. But suffice to say that we would also work with the MDDA. We do a lot of work with the MDDA so that we can really begin to advance the sustainability of community radio stations, which has been one of the problems that we had in rolling out this infrastructure. Having recognized that, we have also commenced training around financial management, governance, because we had found that those were somewhat lacking in the community radio stations. We're also looking at the program to share best practices, because you'll find some radio stations, definitely dependent on location, doing extremely well in terms of income generations, others doing very poorly. So we started a program where we would share best practices to begin to help this community radio stations to work together. I'm not sure if I left anything here, but thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, the last question remaining is the two questions about the BDM process. You are right. Last year, the digital signal was switched on actually 30 October, a day before the initial plan date. But that was to coincide with a big international conference of the International Telecommunications Union, and it's them that made the rules about the African region that needs to go digital by a certain time. We have to go as part of the one region. Africa and some other parts of Europe need to go digital by 2015. We've decided to bring that date forward because, I mean, we also want to, in the preparation for 2010, to see how can we proceed with that. Since the switch on, with the SABC and obviously the Sentec as a signal distributor, the digital signal is being piloted in specific areas, and I can't remember how many set-top boxes were dished out in a thousand. Yeah, so that they can see how the digital signal works. That project is progressing well, and we're finding out snags and snitches that we have to deal with. The plan for now, how it now stands, is early in the new financial year, it would be available for the public. We hope by then we would have sorted out all the problems. But linked to that and the question of when the analog signal is going to be switched off, 1 November 2011, what is required for anybody to have a TV broadcast signal by the 2nd November of 2011 is you must either have a digital television, and that means not the high-definition television that gives you a nice digital picture. It is a television that can read the digital signal. Or you must have a set-top box. And that box is like a decoder. It converts the digital signal into an analog signal so that you can still keep your nice, as Minister and Deputy Minister said, they just found out when they joined the department that they do not have digital televisions. Their plasma screens are not digital televisions. They will still have to have a set-top box to be able to get the signal. The whole idea is before the switch off of the analog signal that every TV-owning household should have either, as I said, the set-top box or digital television. Currently, there are no digital televisions that can read the signal available in South Africa, but I'm sure they will be coming into the market. Now, to enable that process, obviously, we will have to start developing set-top boxes. So that's why I said in one of our big programs this year is the development of this set-top box manufacturing sector development strategy. We've got a few big players that's manufacturers of set-top boxes, but government, when they approved the broadcasting digital migration policy last year, in principle they agreed that we must look at a process where we bring in smaller players in the industry so that we can expand, that it's not just the big and strong ones that will be able to manufacture set-top boxes. The intention is also to export, that we really build the industry, because if the rest of Africa is going to catch up with us or to join us in going digital, the idea is for us to be able to export the set-top boxes. The broadcasting deeper migration awareness campaign will play a key role as well to make people aware that they have to buy set-top boxes. We are quite aware that there's a lot of TV-owning households that are poor that will not be able to afford the full price of a set-top box. Hence, the approval by Cabinet of what we call the Scheme of Ownership Support for set-top boxes of poor TV-owning households. So we will subsidize a portion of the cost of a set-top box. We will be working together with key departments. In this case, it would be obviously finance, but also the Department of Social Development, because with their database of all the people who get government programs or social assistance, with that we can define who would then qualify, whether you're a pensioner or a disability grantee or under a certain income. So once that is finalized, people will be informed who will qualify for this subsidy. And then part of that would be the implementation. So we will have to look at how are we going to do it. I know in America what they've done is they handed out coupons to people. So we must look at, if we go that route, what is it going to cost government so that people can get access to coupons and then take it to a retailer to get access to or to buy a set-top box. I think those were the questions that were asked with regard to BD. Sorry?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just want to know, what is the cost of such a set-top box? And what will be... Okay, you haven't... No, exactly what the subsidy will be at this moment, but round about, what will the subsidy on the set-top box be as well? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I wanted to to make a follow-up on both the presenters. Number one, I'll start from the other side. You touch the issue of the control over the boards. Also, I'm a little bit concerned if they can clarify us the control over the functioning or the broadcasting itself. I'll put an example why I'm raising it. You go to other provinces, like in our province, we are having some of the national radio stations, like Ikwala Kwala and Ikwikwis. But still, we are having 15 years now, 16 years after the new dispensation. They're still operating like in the all homelands system, whereby if you are in the former Gwandebele, you can't catch some of the radio stations, except if you are having a DSTV and the like. How come? Why? And then also, I'll put an example. You see, there's something very disturbing in terms of communicating and educating our people. This I'll put an example with the thing which is happening nowadays in CTV, which is Cape Town TV. Sometimes it's more advanced than an SABC because of the programs of some of the things, because we can forgive but we can't forget on what was happening. To educate the people, for us not to go back on what was happening, there are a lot of programs which are happening there which are not happening this side. While a lot of things were there, we beamed in the SABC news. But why is it difficult not to get some of these things being broadcast at the moment? And then also... You spoke about the issue on the analog system and then sector box. I'm really concerned. If you go to Gwanyamazane, we're still struggling, same township. We're having a place where we still don't have an access of TV. What about analogs and sector box now? You are more advanced while we're still struggling with the past. Can't you have something on that in that regard? Lastly, about the issue of the qualification of subsidies, I would put on that one. I'm a little bit concerned because a lot of time, a lot of people, they will speak about elderly people, pensioners, most of the time, that's the target. But forgetting to look at the current political situation or the environment, not political as such, that there are a lot of orphans to find that at home. We are left with two kids or three kids which are under it. Maybe the elderly person, they left a smaller TV which they can do 1, 2, 3. How can we take those people on board? Because sometimes it's very difficult. There are a lot of things which are happening when some of the people in the authorities, when they apply
to some of these things. If you can assist on that in that regard. Well, thank you.
No, thanks, sir. I will repeat some other things. Just one quick follow-up. And maybe before that, I don't know why it's all about the Banda afraid to say it's a political situation or environment that we are confronted with. It is a social, economic, and political environment that we are confronted with. So we don't have to be afraid of saying it. Now, interestingly, as we move towards the centenary of the ANC, your medium-term strategy 2012, I don't see your strategy. I'm struggling with the sit-up box or set-up box. Okay. I don't see your budget speaking to that, especially 2011, with the economic challenges that we're confronted with now, and that would speak to the response you would give to your initial subsidy. Because I remember sometimes last year, a lot was said about, I think it was about 400 and something, but in that region. So with the economic challenges, your budget is not saying, based on this, we are going to also respond to this challenge to keep at par, because obviously the prices are not going to be the same in a period of 2 years and so forth. If we can just get clarity on that, sure.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. Can I just start asking or answering the questions or addressing the issues around the set-top boxes? Yes, currently we are estimating that a set-top box, because of the capabilities we want the set-top box to have, would be around the figure of 700 Rand. Now, I know there is an argument that can be made, but you know what, you can, and I'm not bad-mouthing the country, but you can get cheap China versions for about 200 Rand. When the whole issue of busy broadcasting digital migration, we realized we will have to have a policy because we will have to move to digital, to the digital platform. We just realized that it provides an opportunity to be innovative, to address the digital divide in this country as well, because we are a developmental state. We are not like America, where you can put in a set-top box where it's just purely a conversion of one signal to other signals, so you don't have to buy the expensive television. So we said that we want a set-top box to have the capability of what we call e-government services and information. Because if you give people access to information, you contribute to their empowerment. So the capability, and I'm not technical, so I don't want to go into the technical part, but if you want the technicality of it, we can come and do a specific presentation on the set-top box that I'm explaining now. But basically, it just means that with the assistance of the remote, because with the set-top box, you get a remote control. And then you can access arguments like the website of the DOC. And you can see what vacancies are the DOC if you want to apply. Or you want to go and study for health issues, and then you go on to the health website and see what you can find there. You want to apply for a birth certificate or whatever the case may be, you can get onto Home Affairs' website. That is the capability, but that makes the box a little bit more expensive. But we really feel if we go that route, we will bridge or get far in bridging the digital divide. The whole issue of making e-government a priority is not something that comes from the DOC. It actually started long ago, and it was driven by the Department of Public Service and Administration. So we see this as our contribution in just taking it a little step further. So because of that, it is a little bit more expensive, and government or cabinet approved that we will pay a 70% subsidy of whatever it will cost. I get the argument, we don't know what's going to happen, what impact the global economic meltdown is going to have on whatever needs to be imported to build the set-top boxes here. Obviously, but the principle of 70% subsidy will not change. And then with regard to who will qualify for the subsidies, perhaps I didn't say that quite clearly. Over and above the people who get grants from government, the other criteria you would, and that's why we have to work with National Treasury as well, you have to look at the income level. So if you have a TV-owning household, you know, that is headed by a child, because we've got this problem, so obviously there will be no income, so it will fall within that bracket. But this is a challenge that we are having to look at. It is actually unpacking that criteria so that we address the issues that you raised. Because there's a lot, thousands and thousands of people, millions of people that at this current stage cannot afford a set-top box, or, you know, but they are not a recipient of a government grant. Exactly. So that would fall in that vicinity, in that level, below a certain income level. How, if they have no money, I think we will take it back to the policy unit to say that we must also ask then, if there are people really with no income and they are TV owning, what do we do? Because just to come back, if you do not have a set-top box, or you do not have a digital television by come 2011, when the analog signal is switched off, you will not be able to receive the signal. Or you might receive the analog signal, but it will be very, very distorted and there will be lots of interference. So we will have to look at that. And I'm sure that the signal will not be switched off. Well, we cannot switch off the signal until such time that we have sorted out all of these challenges. With regard to the point raised, but there are some areas, and I think there are many areas I know in the country that still do not have access to the current free-to-air television stations. And if they do have access, the quality of the picture is not that good. Now, my friend, the CFO must help me. If I remember correctly, when the minister met with the SABC to look, well, we had a bilateral meeting and they shared their plans for the coming year, the SABC last year started looking at those areas. And again, this is very technical, but I think, Annika, this is the low transmission. What they put up new transmissions to make sure that there would be reception in those areas where there's currently no reception. And the SABC, in line with their plans to get ready for the switch off in 2011, are going to look at making sure that transmissions towers are put up in those areas to ensure that there is reception. And perhaps before I ask Harry to add the issue of the community radios, perhaps I must use this opportunity, Chairperson, I wanted to propose earlier that, you know, our state-owned entities also come before the portfolio committee to present their strategic plans and what they plan to do. So I would think it would be good for arguments like if you can talk to the SAB or ask the SABC to come and deal with those issues of reception of television and how they plan to roll it out. But not just the SABC. You could perhaps consider to ask our other state-owned entities and plan and ask them to make a presentation as to what their plans are with regard to post offices or Centec with regard to roll out of ICT infrastructure and signal distribution in the provinces. I hope
that we've got in our program, we thought that the Department of Communication, you might be in the position to maybe highlight, but we've got them in our program. Yes.
Shall we say, yeah, that's a good idea. We read mine. I hope I've answered the question with regard to the set-top box and broadcasting signal. And then I'll just ask Harry to continue with the question on the community radio station.
Thanks, Acting DG and Chairperson. I mean, I think the biggest advantage we have with the broadcasting digital migration is that because it uses spectrum efficiently, you would get a much bigger coverage of TV signal than you currently have with your analog signal. So you would find that we can cover much, much bigger area. I don't have the exact numbers, but I think I'm sure my colleagues can help me. The biggest coverage you would have currently is you would have SABC 2 at about 92%, and with countrywide. The smallest you probably would have ETV at about 56%. With migration, you would have all of these channels available throughout the country. I mean, SABC alone are talking in the region of how many channels? I'm talking the digital environment, about 20 channels that will be available countrywide. I think, therefore, the other biggest advantage in the digital space addresses the question of content that gets aired. And in the digital space, the policy provides for a number of channels that meets the country's developmental objectives, such as an educational channel, a health channel, an SMME channel. So this provides us with the opportunity to address some of the concerns that you're currently raising. And to this end, the bill that we're working on, that the minister has announced recently, also talk about developing a funding model between a pure public broadcasting services and a commercial broadcasting services, because currently all of these things are mixed, and therefore, you know, we need to have a Chinese wall as to what constitutes commercial, what constitutes a public, to really get away from some of the challenges that are being raised here. With regards to funding, you're correct. You're correct that we have, you know, minimum funding up to 2012 if you look at the budget we presented. We however, in terms of the medium-term expenditure framework, on an annual basis, we go back to National Treasury and request funding. So we're anticipating to have funding not only in 2012, but in 2011 and 2012. And maybe the good part about this funding is that we've managed to ring fence and secure funding from the Universal Service Fund, which is a fund contributed by the telecoms operator to meet developmental objectives. So the issue of which really will begin to address the issue of the economic climate and competing needs of government, because this is a fund that is ring fenced for ICT projects. Thanks.
It's always good to listen to all these beautiful things. And I'm listening to the department, I'm asking myself, with the introduction of this digital whatever, many channels, e-government, and I'm asking myself how many public servants are going to lose their jobs in the process of doing that. But
thank you, Madam Chair. I'm really betting with that one about the public servants losing their jobs. But anyway, we'll hear more about that in due course, I'm sure. Madam Chair, I'm very new and I've listened carefully this afternoon to a lot of things. The one thing we haven't discussed are the three bills that you propose to bring to us, but the particular one of interest to me would be the Public Services Broadcasting Bill. We're talking about these 20 channels, e-government, all the rest of it. And I hear no comment about the politicization of broadcasting. Our history in this country has been one where a government of the day has generally dominated the public broadcaster. And now we're going to expand the possibility for this to happen, including in the community radio stations. You know, they're being set up by municipalities. Municipalities are run by particular political parties. What are the proposals to ensure that these broadcasts, whether radio or television, are indeed impartial and do not propagate the interests of a particular political party, because really that is the huge danger of this increase in potential of broadcasting. Then the other one, going back, the question of you know, when I looked at these e-cooperatives, I had no idea what you were talking about or what they were, and I listened carefully, and I think I know what they are. But of course you've identified what we could have told you right in the beginning, is that you set these things up, then what do? What business are they in? I mean, you go and set them up in my rural area, what on earth is the business they're in? They don't have a business. Now you're trying to set them up as website designers and all sorts of things. That should have been where you started. Don't set up the cooperative and then say, well, now we've set them up, now what are they going to do? What business are they in? To me, that makes little sense, but thank goodness you're now addressing that problem before you set up more cooperatives all over the country, great expectations, training people, and then say to them, well, actually, we don't know what you're going to do. What is your business? Because essentially, that's what you're saying to me, is that we've set them up, 96 of them, now sustainability. Now we've got to try and find out how we sustain these things. Surely that should have been the starting point. But anyway, that's just a comment. You don't have to respond to that. But I do need a response in terms of the how do we ensure that broadcasting, expanded as it is going to be in the digital era, is not politicized. Thank you very much.
Honorable Doug, can you say your comment?
No, Chair, I wanted to say some of the comments made might not necessarily be relevant for this particular exercise, because they've got serious political implications. This is now political implications, because if you then have to respond to some of them, we may not be able to conclude the business of the day. So I would suggest that we separate the two. Matters that need political engagement, we can deal with them amongst us as committee members, and not put the department on a spot to respond to issues that they would not tomorrow be able to account on whatever that they're going to say. That would be my suggestion, Chair. Well, thanks.
Honorable Lee, I don't want a dialogue. I don't want to.
Madam Chair, it won't be a dialogue. I agree entirely. My question really was, I was concerned about the Public Service Broadcasting Bill and what it contained and whether it addressed that issue. That's all. But really, the officials, they won't deal with politics. I agree, and with Honorable John.
They will respond to that.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Member, my colleagues will help me. Basically, the short and the sweet of it, the Public Service Broadcast will deal with answering the question of what do we expect of a public broadcaster? Yeah. It's basically, what do we expect, and therefore, how are we going to take it forward? That's one level. The other issue that will be addressed by the bill is the issue of local content. So those are the two legs that the bill will stand on, without going into too deep.
Okay. I think we've come to the end of our meeting. Let me, at this point in time, thank, though we budgeted till 5 o'clock, but the other issues will deal with them next quarter, because it's the first time that we meet, and we will still see you for the rest. But let me thank you for the presentation and the responses. What you haven't given to us, Mr. Ntlapo, we will be awaiting for those responses. And let me also thank members. Honorable Mlenza, not wrong. You know, certain language I don't understand quite clearly.
Chairperson, I was saying, I was showing you this document that we would have to take just about 2 minutes on.
That was on our agenda, but let me thank the department for being here with us and giving us the information that is going to be fruitful, helpful to us in our constituencies. And we,
with our pleasure. Thanks.
Honorable Grunewald, we finished in the business of the committee now. Oh, you're just writing. Okay, I'm sorry. Sorry for that. We'll greet outside the Honorable Mr. Honorable members, you remember we distributed minutes. And we distributed minutes, and I requested members to look at the minutes so that at our next meeting we can be able to adopt the minutes. We've got in front of us the minutes of the 24th of June. So if there are any corrections, members can indicate, and if there are any amendments, members can indicate, so that we adopt the minutes. Honorable Dow?
Chair, seeing that this was more information, I move for the adoption.
Move for adoption, Honorable Grunewald, Honorable Manson, second the adoption of the minutes. And then we have also distributed the minutes of the 1st of July. Last week, we're not going to adopt them. I request that you go and do the same, because you didn't receive minutes earlier, or did you?
No.
So I won't pressurize you or bother you to adopt the minutes now. You take the minutes, read them, and then at our next meeting when we come back, we will adopt the minutes. Thank you very much, honorable members, and have a lovely constituency period. No recess. You know it's constituency. You can put 2 days for yourself for recess. Or a week. Yeah, just it's a recess, but definitely you will have to do also constituency week, constituency work, and also your celebrations for the Mandela Day. I wish you good luck. Yes. No. I couldn't postpone mine. No. Because yesterday, you know, yeah. No, but he might. I'm telling you, we are the people.